The Bumblecast is for entertainment purposes only. The hosts' comments and opinions, and those of their guests, are wholly their own and do not represent that of any other entity. Content is provided as is, with no guarantees of accuracy or timeliness.
Welcome to a special guest episode of the Bumblecast. I'm your host, Ian Flynn, the Bumble King, and joining me as always is my Bumble co-host, Kyle, JCRB Krause.
Yeah, whatever. Who cares about me? We've got somebody I don't know if we ever expected this person to show up and want a guest episode, but here they are.
Please welcome the incomparable Austin Lee Matthews.
What's up, Bumblebees?
Is that what they're called now? I don't know about that, but okay,
we'll go with that. I couldn't think of something.
We'll go with that. That's fine.
How are we doing?
Austin's level of celebrity. He can call us whatever we want. Just let him say it.
Oh, yes, because I have such a huge level of celebrity with my 5,000 followers on Blue Sky.
You say that, but your IMDb listing is not too shabby, sir.
Thank you.
I will see. Yeah, I agree.
And I get to add something new to it today.
Yeah, for those who don't want to go to IMDb because they're lazy, let them know, the dear listeners at home, who you are and what you do.
Hi, my name is Austin Lee Matthews, and I am a voice actor for video games and cartoons, some of which you may have played, some of which you may not have played. I am Roche in Final Fantasy VII Remake and Rebirth. I am Arthur Kingsman in the Mystery Skulls series, Cookie Run Kingdom. I voice several characters in that, most notably Fire Spirit and Bat Cat Cookie. As of today, I can finally announce that I've been sitting on this for over a year. I did Zed Necrodopolis in the Disney Channel's Chibi Burst. So I'm officially on the Disney Channel, baby.
Nice.
That made my mother so happy. I'm just like, hey, mother, guess who's on the Disney Channels today? And then she was just like, that's my boy. She's been waiting. She's been waiting.
Nice.
But yeah, I've done a few things. I'm happy to do what I do, and I do what I love and I get paid for it. And so I really don't work a day in my life except when I do.
It's a good line to trot out. And then you get that one session and it's like, I love this job. I love this job. I don't want to go back to flipping chicken. I love this job.
I had one of those recently where I'm just like, all right, let's get this one over with.
Yeah, this comes down to that sometimes.
The good news is that it's paying me quite well. So I'm just like, you know what? Just get through it.
But how did you get started? I know that's what everybody asks voice actors, and it's something I've kind of chipped away at here and there. But where did you begin, and what launched you off with your successful career?
Well, you see, 65 million years ago.
We're going all the way back to the beginning, literally.
A meteor struck the planet and made me realize, I kind of want to do voiceover. Because, like, I grew up watching a lot of cartoons. I never really enjoyed, like live action stuff. But I always liked cartoons. I liked video games. Genova was in said meteor, says Lorenzo in the chat. that's the mother I was referring to earlier. I watched a lot of cartoons growing up, and my biggest inspirations for wanting to get into this was the early seasons of SpongeBob, because the first season of SpongeBob SquarePants had a bunch of bonus features, including, like, you know, behind the scenes with the voice actors, and like the voice actors would do audio commentaries for the episodes, and it was a really fun to watch those, and it got me really, really interested into it. And when I was really young, I went to a Paul Williams concert, and I got to meet with him afterwards when I was really, really, really young. And I was like, yeah, I met you. I liked your music because I heard about you in Dexter's Laboratory. And he's just like, oh, well, did you know that I voiced the Penguin in Batman, the animated series? And I was just like, you can do that. Then I wanted to be an animator. I didn't really have I didn't have the patience for it, I should say. And decided, you know what? Well, I don't have the patience for animating, but I was having fun with that whole voiceover thing. And so I just decided to, you know, get into that, pursued that professionally, took a bunch of classes. I did a voice acting competition at Anime Expo, made the finals, and then got to perform on stage live at the Microsoft Theater. And my mother watched me live and was just like, so why haven't you asked for like actual classes yet? And I'm just like, because I was scared to ask because I'm living with my mother and I don't have any money. And she's just like, look, I'll just pay for classes. And I'm like, okay. And so she paid for the classes with a studio called Bang Zoom. I worked with them a lot with those classes. And then they brought me in to do like some walla behind some like background stuff. And then as I went on, I got into bigger and better stuff, started getting more named roles in their animes and their videos games. What got me really, really started, the point where I am now, was I worked on a show, I worked on a video game called Archangel. If any of you have played that game, that would be freaking amazing, but I don't think anybody has played that game. But it was a virtual reality game that was by a newly formed at that point studio called Skybound. It was Skydance, but they became Skybound. I got to do some voiceover for that. I was one of the main characters in it. And it was directed by a guy named Tom Keegan, who is a huge video game director. He directs all the Star Wars games. He directed like that Indiana Jones game. He's directed a bunch of stuff that you have played and never heard his name before. he's a fantastic director. He's probably, if he's not my favorite director I've ever worked with, he's definitely one of them because he's just a fantastic human being. We worked on that game. And then a couple years later, that same studio was like, hey, we're working on a Walking Dead game called Saints and Sinners, and we want to reunite the cast for Archangel to do some background voices and maybe like some NPCs who give you quests and some zombies. Are you interested in that? And I'm just like, of course I'm interested in that. That would be so much fun. And they're just like, cool. You need to be in the union. And so I'm just like, I'm fine with getting Taft-Hartleyed. It means like, you know, I get to be in the union. That's cool. That's fine. That'll make me look good for an agent. So I come in, I record that, and Tom says, hey, do you have an agent? And I'm just like, no, I'm still looking. He's just like, let me throw you at Vox. And I'm like, all right, that's fine. I'm not expecting to like, you know, like make any headway there. He sends me, he recommends me there, and I email them and is like, hey, you know, Tom told me to reach out. And they're just like, are you available to come in next week? And I'm just like, yeah, sure, I'll come in. So I came in for the interview, and they're just like, so this interview is mostly a formality. We want you on our team. And I'm just like, okay.
Very
and
nice.
About a month after that, I auditioned for FF7, completely forgot about it. Thought, oh man, like they've made a mistake bringing me on because I've been auditioning and I haven't been booking. A month later, my agent calls me and was just like, hey, you booked FF7. And I was just like, I was so excited. That was a fun 3 months. I got to record that. That was fantastic. But yeah, that's really what got me to the point where I am right now, where I'm working at least semi consistently enough to usually pay my bills.
Very cool.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
That's a roundabout way of saying, just do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Take the plunge.
Just do it. What's the worst that could happen?
I don't know.
Answer. It was like, I was expecting something, you know, kind of light and fluffy. It's like, oh, I just tried hard and did the basics. And no, this is like the abridged version of your biography. So cool. Okay.
I mean, it's such a big part of my life that I'm just like, this is kind of the best answer I can give is the long one.
And it is the best answer. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you can talk about it at all,
yes.
The role I'm most familiar with you doing is Roche.
Yeah, me too.
Yes, my friend.
Don't get me fanboying on stream. Come on.
You're,
no, okay.
You've got me fanboying before a week. I can afford this.
This is weird.
Okay, oh, quick no. Sidebar. Quick sidebar. I'm laying it all online here. In my own book, Dragoon, there's a villainous character named Lux.
Uh-huh.
And he was very much inspired by your performance as Roche.
I've never heard this information before, ever.
It's basically a split between you and Ian St. Clair's Zavid out of Tales of Zestiria.
That's awesome.
You two do the fusion dance. That's Luke's. So
I've read a bit, and I do know what you're referring to, though.
So right there, I've not played it myself because I don't have the time for it, but. You know, it's very stoic. It's a very serious game. Everyone's very grim and up their own butt. And then Roche hits the scene. And suddenly there's life and color and fun. If you can talk about it, what kind of direction did they give you for that character? Or what, is it largely your own creation?
There is a certain thing that I bring to Roche that is mine. But my Roche is... very much based on the Japanese voice actor who is Kenta Miyake. He is most known as the voice of All Might in My Hero Academia. I draw a lot of inspiration from his from his performance, because I have to, because with you we have to follow their performance. But because he is so over the top, we have to kind of localize it for English audiences to make it slightly less cartoony than it is sometimes in the Japanese,
which is very funny because it's pretty cartoony.
It's really over the top, and so yes. To give you an idea of how over the top it is in Japanese compared to English, there is a line in English where. The entire sentence is, "I'll see you on the road, my friend." He goes, "I'll see you on the road, my friend."
Yes.
And in Japanese, that sentence is not present. He just says two words, and that's just, "My friend." So we had to pull back from that. That's like the biggest direction that I got was take that and dial it back, like maybe like 2%, essentially. The other thing was he is so infatuated with Cloud, and so we had to bring this level of obsession. And I'm reading the script, and I'm just like, oh, this is an obsession. This dude's in love. He's a romantic.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask you. It's like
he's a romantic.
Did this actually come across as like? Did you intend for it to come across as a crazy and like in love infatuation?
That was a conscious decision on my part specifically. Okay. That was not something that was directed. That was a conscious decision that I made, because for one thing,
yes.
I was reading into like the script, and I'm just like, oh, this guy has got a crush. And I'm like, well, I can do that. I have a fat crush on Cloud. Like, so I'm just like, I can just be me and just crank it up to 11 and rip the knob off.
Yes. Yes.
I can just be completely unabashed with my love of this man. And so like, that was like what I did was I played it. sorry that I'm reading the chat. I played it like he was almost a. We leaned more into it with Rebirth, but almost like he's like a Shakespearean like lover,
yeah.
Who is mm-hmm. trying to impress mm-hmm. the person that he's seeking after. Lo and behold, in Rebirth, we have a line where he straight up says, "What light through yonder balcony
yes.
breaks?"
Yes. Oh my god.
So like we just continuously like leaned more into it. And the other thing that I brought with Roche is that there is just a little tiny bit of what is his name? The gentleman, he just passed away. He was the voice of Oogie Boogie in A Nightmare Before Christmas. I'm trying to remember his name so bad, and it breaks my heart that I cannot remember his name in this exact moment.
Is it Ken Page?
Ken Page, thank you. I knew his last name was Page. Ken Page. There is a little tiny bit of his Oogie Boogie into Roche. There's just a little tiny bit.
Yep.
Okay, I hear it. Yeah.
Yeah, what made me really lean into it was there's a line where he just goes, "I most certainly am," and I read that line and I'm just like, I'm gonna really lean into the "I'm gonna do the best I can," there's a little bit of that sprinkled into Roche here and there. So he's a homoerotic Shakespearean Oogie Boogie is how I would describe him.
Amazing. Absolutely. Yeah,
that is how I play Roche. Yes.
I love your description as a Shakespearean romantic, because that's it.
The
theatricality, the bombastic nature of it. He is living life to its fullest every second, and he loves it. And that's
There's a little bit of Antonio Banderas in there as well.
Yeah.
With how he flirts with Cloud, like the blowing a kiss, or in Rebirth, straight up like winks at him.
Yes.
And it just everything that there's just like little tiny bits of just like wanting romantic, but who's also just like wants to get on his knees and just go, "Oh, my dear love. I mean, my friend." Like that's I just load that into there, and then sometimes we have to dial up the psychopathy of it. Especially in Rebirth.
How do you feel about having to compete for Cloud's love with Sephiroth?
Listen, I am so happy that I get to compete with Sephiroth and Aerith and Tifa, as long as I get to hold Barrett's hand at the end of the day.
Okay.
I'm happy.
Okay. Because I mean, Cloud or Tifa and Aerith definitely have a thing for Cloud, but it really feels like Sephiroth and Roche are the ones who are really obsessed with him. Oh boy.
Oh, and for me to gush a little bit, there's a moment in Rebirth where my voice comes out of Sephiroth's lips for like all of 2 seconds.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was so happy that I got to do that.
Amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
When you say that you have to match the previous performance, does that mean the cinematics and all the in-engine rendering was already done, so you had to match that cadence and those settings and scenes and whatnot?
So we had to match mostly the timing and the performance, albeit dialed a little bit back for like the localization purposes of it. But the good news with the modern Square Enix games is that we don't have to match the lip flaps.
Okay.
Because they reanimate to our lip flaps. So if you ever get Remake or Rebirth, I think they even did this for Kingdom Hearts 3, is that if you switch over to the Japanese dialogue channel, you'll have completely different lip flaps than if you switch to like any other language. It is a really, really, really good piece of attention to detail that I love about all of their games, is that they actually take the time to reanimate all the lip flaps for all the languages. I love that. I wish that more games did that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
It's gotta be a huge undertaking, because
it really is.
I mean, never mind the lip flaps have to match the dialogue, but it also has to stay in the timing of what's already there.
Yeah.
The good news is that we only have to they only have to reanimate the lip flaps for the in-game cinematics.
Mm.
If there's just dialogue scenes where, you know, you can like, press the A button to continue the dialogue, the lip flaps, I think, are just like auto-generated. But with the cinematics, they reanimate the lip flaps.
Well, I mean, it's Square Enix game. Half of it is cinematics anyway.
Oh, yeah. Which is, you know what? I love that about them, because gosh dang, do they do some pretty cinematics.
They are very pretty.
Very pretty games.
Mm-hmm. I went to, go ahead.
No, please. By all means.
I was gonna say, I went to the
the remake concert at the Microsoft Theater several years ago. And I took my mother with me. And my mother is not, she's not a gamer at all. Like, her gaming experience is Galaga and Ms. Pac-Man. And they're playing the music. And as soon as, like, they're showing the opening cinematic and they show Aerith and she goes, oh, well, she's really pretty. And then they start doing the pull back where you see the full scope of how big Midgar is. And I hear my mother next to me just go, whoa.
This is what video games are now?
she like during the intermission, she was just like, is this what video games look like?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, yeah. And then at the end of it, she was like, that was so good. And the visuals were so pretty. The music was really nice. I got really sad when that one girl died, though. And I'm like, oh, Jesse. She's like, yeah, that made me so sad. I didn't know that video games could do that.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Oh, dear.
Oh, boy. Is she in for a ride in the sequel?
she doesn't even know about Aerith yet.
Boy. Oh, boy. Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
Oh, goodness.
But yeah. Speaking of turning thoughts into prayers, I see that you did Zoisite with Team Four Stars Toonami.
Oh, yes. Oh, my good. Oh, yes. I had so much fun with Zoisite.
I could
Zoisite
tell.
Was so much fun. When Scott was just like, hey, I want you to read for a couple characters. Like, you can say no if you want. And I'm just like, a chance to work with Team Four Star? Yeah. And so he had me read for Zoisite and Artemis. He's like, I think I want you as Zoisite, but I'm also going to have you read for Artemis. And I was like, yeah, sure, that's fine. So I read for both of them, and he's just like, cool, can we record Zoisite tomorrow? And I'm just like, yeah, we can. So we recorded that, and it was so much fun. It's Scott gives such gosh dang good direction. He's a guy that I like working with Scott, because Scott has such a distinct vision in his head for what he wants at any given moment. And he will get you there. He will be like, no, you're here. I want you here. And it always works out, because like whatever he has in his head is way funnier than whatever I had in my head going in. And it just, it works so well. And one of my partners, has been watching, the Sailor Moon parody just on loop for the last few months, because he just laughs his butt off every time he watches it.
I do have one.
It's so rapid fire. You got to watch it multiple times to get all the jokes.
Yeah, that's Team Four Star.
Sorry, Kyle. I
no, that's
you.
Okay. That's okay. I have one quick thing that I want to ask.
Yes.
What is a voice director's job? I think I kind of know, but I'm wondering if most of our audience realizes what a voice director does.
Oh, goodness. All right. I have to describe my own job. Oh, dear. My job is to help align the actor's acting with the writer's vision.
Okay.
And make it sound, bring the actor towards that vision. And maybe bring the writer towards the actor's vision and create a beautiful, harmonious thing where it just sings.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's use a current example. Lorenzo, friend of the show, the whole reason why Austin's with us today, has his own project called Arzen.
Yes, it
and
is.
There were a lot of promotional, what do you call those, animatics?
Yes, the Arisan promotional animatics. They were, I would call them motion comics is what I would say.
Okay, yeah.
And Austin was voice director on that.
Yes.
I did the voice of Pale Solomon, and so
yes,
he directed me on that project. So when I came in to give my line with the direction I had discussed with Lorenzo, Austin was the one who kind of said, okay, that was a good take. Let's slow it down. Let's speed it up. Let's emphasize this.
Okay. Let's bring it more in this direction.
All righty.
Yeah.
I understand. So is it like, would voice directors like be playing like other characters in the scene for you to kind of bounce off of in some cases?
That is how I direct, actually. There are many directors will just be like, all right, here's the line, read it, and then we'll tweak it. I direct. Whenever I get to direct, I read through the scene with the actor.
Okay.
Because I have found that that is the best way to get the most natural sounding read so that they're not just reading something in a vacuum.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's usually how I would often imagine voice direction goes, is to, you know, read with the actor rather than just have them read the line.
You would be surprised at how often that doesn't happen.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, it doesn't happen a whole lot, especially with video games, but that's also just because with video games, there is so much dialogue.
Right.
But there are a few video game directors who I have worked with who are very good about doing what is called a read-in, where they will read the line that comes right before yours that right. allows you to bounce off of it.
Okay.
I have recently worked with a director whose name is Pierce, and he is so good about not just giving me the context, but also giving me something to work off of with that. And I've directed a few shows now at this point, and that directing style has worked for me and has allowed me to be like, okay, I liked what you were doing there. You know, maybe think about this with it and this and then that and that and that. And it made Arisan sound good. It made Megaton Girl sound freaking awesome as well. It's making Tally Ho sound fantastic. It's worked out well for me so far. And if I get to do more voice direction, there's another show. I directed a fourth show, Jump Leads. That was a show I got to direct some freaking huge names on. And it's just a small podcast that my dear friend Ben Padden does. And I directed it the same way. But the good news with that show is that, we recorded it, ensemble. When I directed Ian, I directed it solo. I directed all of the actors in Arisan solo. So that was how I directed that show. With Jump Leads, we recorded ensemble, which means that every actor is in the room, or at least in like a Discord or Skype call, or whatever. Okay. Not Skype anymore, it'd be Zoom. Mm-hmm. We're all like reading together, and it allows the actors, it allows their natural chemistry to like work together. I don't get to do that very often as an actor, because that's just not how we do stuff as much anymore, sadly.
Okay, I was going to actually ask that. How often are you playing against other voice actors in a scene? But sounds like not often.
Maybe like 1% of the time anymore.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I can count on one hand the amount of times that I've done that. I did it with a show called Yoo-Hoo to the Rescue, which is a show for kids who are like kindergartners. Lego Friends is a show that I did that with. We actually did a video game, that game I mentioned earlier, Archangel. The first two sessions of that game, we recorded that ensemble, and that's just because the main characters, it was like a team of four people. And director Tom really wanted the four of us to get together, see how we were going to play off of each other, so that when we had to record solo eventually, we knew where everyone else was going to be at. And that was a really good way of bringing some extremely natural and sometimes beautiful reads out of everybody, especially Christopher Watson, who voiced the main character, Guardian. He is one of the best actors that I've gotten to work with. He's fantastic, really underrated actor. I hope that he gets his flowers more often. And then there's another show called The Beach Buds, which I got to record over the course of 6 months. So we got to really get to know each other, and really know our comedy styles, really get to read off of each other in a way that we were building off of each other. Every joke hit better than the last because we knew each other. And it's really the first time that I've gotten to feel like being part of a family of actors. You know, it was a beautiful, beautiful moment where we'd come in, we would read all the lines, and then they've scheduled us for 4 hours, but we did this so well that we would get out in two, get paid for the full four. I would bring cupcakes that my mother made. She made alcoholic cupcakes that I'd bring to everybody, and we'd have these big parties afterward. And it was fantastic. And when those 6 months were done, we all went to a Mexican restaurant afterward, and we We cried about the beautiful times that we had together. We cried, mourned the people who we wished could have been there with us, who are no longer with us, to see how happy we all got to be. And it's broken my heart over the last 6 years that nobody within the United States or the UK has been able to experience the Beach Buds, because it's a show that, like, it's a show from Indonesia, but we recorded it in English, and then they dubbed it into Indonesian. It's a very odd thing where the show is from somewhere, we recorded it in a different language, and then they dubbed it in the original language. It's very odd. But people have only ever seen it if they live in Indonesia, India, Australia, and I think a few places in South America. And I'm pretty sure, if I remember correctly, if I read the thing correctly, it is finally being available for English speaking audiences outside of Australia on Monday. So I'm hoping that maybe people watch it, and I can talk about that because it's been properly announced. I'm just making sure that I read the right date. But yeah, it's been announced that it's coming out. It's dropping on some YouTube channel, some kid's YouTube channel on Monday. And I'm so happy about that because people finally get to experience probably the single funniest thing I've ever worked on in my entire life.
Be really funny.
Yeah, that's saying something.
They redubbed the English for the Australian audience.
It's funny because they wouldn't have to redub me because the character I voiced was a big Australian bird named Alejandro.
Good.
He's one of my favorite characters I've ever voiced, and I'm sad that nobody has heard him outside of, you know, Australia and the other places that I mentioned. He's so much fun. The thing with Alejandro is that he goes from 0 to 100 real fast. Like, he'll be like, oh, hey, Bio, how's it going? And then he'll, like, Bio will say, like, hey, if somebody said that you shouldn't surf that wave, how would you respond? And then you'll hear a tea kettle, like, you know, slowly raising, and he'll just scream, what? And so I got to just have fun blowing my voice out every Tuesday for 6 months.
Wow.
Yeah, we were working on that show back in 2019. And so I've had to wait that long for other people to see it. I've seen it because I've watched it from the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. I managed to get a hold of that network and watch it on their website. And I'm extraordinarily proud of it. It's one of those things that, like, I don't care that nobody's seen it. I'd love more people to see it, but it was just such an experience, and I had so much fun, and it's so funny. I go back and watch it sometimes just because it's just a dang funny show.
You're so clearly in love with the craft and love what you do. It's just so enriching. I'm sitting here smiling. It's like,
yeah, yeah,
you're just,
same.
You're just loving it and living it.
Yeah, I love getting to do my job.
Oh, it's alive. So obviously you can't talk about anything that you have coming up, but is there anything that you would particularly want to do? Any character or franchise you would like to get into with the blanket understanding that you're not confirming that you're in anything? These are all pie in the sky. And if they happen to cross over in the future, what a lucky coincidence.
For like if we're talking like dream roles, like things that I aspire to, well, someday I'd like to be the voice of Goofy, but I also want Bill Farmer to live forever.
I mean, yeah,
it's funny because both of, like, my dream roles are like, someday I want to voice that character, but I also want them to be that. I want, because the two roles are Goofy, who is voiced by Bill Farmer, who I love, and I want him to be Goofy forever.
Yes.
And the other one is Shadow. And as much as I would love to be Shadow, Kirk Thornton is one of my best friends in the world.
Okay.
And I never want him to stop being Shadow. So Kirk, my experience with Kirk is he directed me on a few games back in the day, and then he was actually a guest star on the Beach Buds for a few episodes.
Hey.
And then a few years later after that, actually literally the very next year, he was the director for, actually he still is the director for the Final Fantasy VII Remake trilogy.
Oh shoot.
Okay.
Yeah, and he's been just so wonderful to work with and getting to know him, and like it's funny cuz like I ran into him at a studio for something completely unrelated. And he didn't recognize me for a second. And I was like, "Hey, Kirk." And he's like, he looked at me. He's like, "Oh, Austin." And he like looked at me for a second. And I'm just like, "What's going on with Kirk?" And then like he's like, "It's good to see you." And then I'm like, "It's good to see you too." And then he walks away. And I go to the studio. I record a little bit. And then I come out and I see that he's on break on something. And like he like looks at me again. He just smiles. And I'm just like, "What's up?" And he just goes, "You've really lost a lot of weight. You look fantastic." And I'm just like, "Oh, yeah, the last time you saw me, I was probably 100 pounds heavier." and he's just like, "You look fantastic. I'm so proud of you." And I'm like, "Oh, thanks, dude." And so I love Kirk. He's such a sweetheart. And he's just, I love getting to work with him. And so I want him to always voice all of the roles forever. I never want him to not being any of the roles that he voices. So it's hard for me to say that I have a particular dream role because they're both people who I'm just like, please voice them forever.
His shadow is good, undeniable, but I would love to hear him reprise his Jade Curtis out of Tales of the Abyss.
Oh, yes. Mm. Oh, my goodness. He's just so good. He's so good.
Absolutely.
This effortlessness in the presentation, that joyful detachment, but also maybe he's threatening you. You can't be sure. And it's so much fun.
Yeah. He's just, the man is so talented. And he's funny in the Beach Buds. He's so funny. I'm trying to remember like what character he was playing, but like he was having a blast with all of us. He just slotted right in. The guest actors that we got to work with were fantastic.
Is there anything you've got coming up that's been confirmed that you can talk about?
Anything coming up that's been confirmed?
Beach Buds aside.
Well, Beach Buds aside, yes, because I can talk about that forever.
Yeah.
Well, I would, it's not upcoming, but this morning I got to be a Disney character officially. I voice Zed Necrodopolis in Chibiverse. That was a lot of fun. But as of right now, I don't have anything that I can talk about coming up. I've got a show that I wrote and directed myself, but that came out a few years ago. I'm working on another show right now. I'm writing it. It's called Halcyon Dazed, and I'm really, really excited about it. I'm hoping to maybe eventually get the ball rolling on that. And we're probably going to do it either as a motion comic in the same way that the Arisan comics were, or I'll just go back to my strong suit and just make it a radio play.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I love making a radio play. I've made a few of them, and I love doing it. It's probably one of my favorite hobbies is just writing something, getting actors together, and sometimes not even getting actors together, just doing it myself. I did a one-man show. I did a Sam and Max radio play a couple years ago that I did all of the voices for.
Oh no, we got to hear this. Where do we hear this?
It's called Sam and Max Dashed and Dined. It's on my YouTube channel. I'll post a link for it real quick.
Okay.
Is this episode? Yeah, this is not that episode. Somebody posted in chat the picture of Zed Necrodopolis. It's not that same episode, but that is the character. Yes. Let me pull up the Sam and Max thing real quick. I had so much fun making it, and there are people who still find it, and they just go, "Hey, your Sam is pretty good. Your Max is pretty good." I'm like, "Thank you. I'm obsessed with these two. They're married, and no one can tell me anywhere otherwise."
It's probably true.
I mean, it's basically true. Oh, there it is. Yeah, somebody else got it.
Yep.
Yep. But yeah, I made that. I had a lot of fun with it. It's a cute short little thing that I had an idea for, And I think I put it together in like a day, and then I made the artwork for it as well. It's one of my favorite hobbies. I just do. Sometimes I'll do fan ones. Sometimes I'll do an original one. But if it's an original one, it's going to be a full series like Megaton Girl and Halcyon Days that I'm working on right now.
Nice.
Yeah.
Multi-talented over here. Doing art. I do
voice acting. I do art. I do music. I do directing. I write. I do whatever I want and sometimes get paid for it. And sometimes I just have fun doing it. I don't care. I can't not be creating at any given moment. I have to do something.
Well, I'm glad I've loved what you've created that I've heard so far.
Thank you. Like, even when I'm just streaming with my friends, I feel like I'm like, you know, creating something. I'm just like having fun, being funny with people. And I've been playing Final Fantasy 14 with friends on stream recently. And that's been a lot of fun. That's basically like the thing I can talk about is I think I'm going full on into just being a Final Fantasy 14 streamer because it's just so much dang fun. And there's so much of it. I've got like 12 years of game to catch up on, so I'm going to probably be set playing that game for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I'm known as the video game music guy around these parts, kind of.
Yeah.
So I have some questions for you.
Uh-huh.
To start with, what in your mind is the best Final Fantasy battle theme?
Oh gosh, that's a big question.
Yeah,
like there's several that I love.
You can name more than one. I'll give you that.
I'm going to.
All right, good.
Because I think if we're talking about overall, just like recurring battle theme, I think that my favorite like normal battle theme is Let the Battles Begin from 7.
Okay,
my favorite boss theme that's not like, you know, a spin-off or a remake, the original version of it is Battle 2 from Final Fantasy 4.
Oh, yes. Oh man, that is such a good one. Yeah.
But I think my all-time it's so difficult because there's so many. I think right now it's a toss-up between Midgard Sormer from Rebirth,
okay,
the Airbuster from Remake, and
the Rebirth and Remake soundtrack is amazing. Just off the chain, just crazy.
I think the other one that I'm really obsessed with lately is the orchestral version of Endcaller from Final Fantasy 14.
Okay,
I've been listening to a lot of Final Fantasy music over like the last few weeks. I recently was just like, okay, I know a lot of these soundtracks, but I want to go through like all of them. And so I decided I made like a playlist of like every Final Fantasy soundtrack that I could find on Apple Music. And I've just been slowly going through them. And there's so much of 14 that I could just point to so many songs from that game itself and just be like, that one's my favorite. That one's my favorite. That one's my favorite.
I mean, that's kind of how I feel too about this stuff. It's like, all right, I love this song. I love this song. I love this song. If you asked me to pick a favorite, I wouldn't be able to pick just one.
Yeah. Like, I mean, come on. Like, maybe I'm a lion.
God.
Darkness of Eternity, the Trance Kuja boss theme. The Extreme, somebody said.
The Extreme is really good. Yeah.
The Extreme is so good. Dancing Mad. Come on.
Dancing Mad is legendary.
Of course, One Winged Angel.
My favorite, if I had to pick one gun to my head, is Battle on the Big Bridge.
Battle on the Big Bridge is really good.
That intro is that intro is just nuts. To
Have
that
you
song.
Heard the Pixel remastered version of it?
Yes, yes. And
with
it's
the trumpet just going crazy.
Just going ham, yes.
Going
it's
nuts.
Beautiful, yes. It's amazing.
I think my favorite Final Fantasy song right now, I'm pretty sure it's Answers, because that song brings so many tears to my eyes.
Oh, yeah.
That's it. Like, the first time I heard that song, I was just like, I had no idea that you could just do this with music. It floored me. And like there's just so many like magnificent peaks and valleys, and the way that that song ends with the, you know, in one fleeting moment, and the land of life flow, in the same fleeting moment, you must live, die, and know. Just hearing that, I'm just like, if I am on a walk, I hear that song and I immediately lock in. And if I get to the end of a block and that end plays, I'm at the end of that block in tears. Oh. It's beautiful. It's so good.
Wow. Very nice. Very nice.
Don't get me started about video games music. I'll go on we could have done an entire podcast about that.
I mean, it sounds like me and you could sit here talking about this kind of stuff all day. And actually, that's 100%. That's another thing. I mean, I'm going to keep it going, honestly, because I wanted to know, like, what other game soundtracks do you enjoy for games specifically that you haven't worked on?
Games that I haven't worked on. Okay. Well, there's 14, Final Fantasy 14, but okay. I mean, it's the same series.
Well, let's say outside of franchises that you've worked on.
I love the Deltarune soundtracks just so much.
Yes.
I almost said Persona. That's another series I worked on.
Did you? Okay, well.
Yeah, I worked on Persona 3.
Okay, okay.
Let's see here. I just got to go through my music. I really like Sonic Adventure 1 and 2, Unleashed, 3 and Knuckles.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Star Fox Assault is gorgeous.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The Star Wolf theme in that game is
it's
just
beautiful.
Amazing, yeah.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. The Ghost Trick soundtrack is really underrated. Some beautiful, beautiful music in there. Of course, Legend of Zelda, Ocarina of Time is one of my favorite soundtracks of all time. The Kingdom Hearts trilogy is just some of the best music you'll ever hear. The Nier Automata soundtrack is amazing. I love all the music from the Mario games, the Yoshi games, the Donkey Kong games. Sam and Max, somebody said, yeah, that's another
Sam
one.
Sam and Max music
is
fantastic, yeah.
Well, Sam and Max, that series has one of my favorite songs ever. It is called Fugue in Dies Irae, and it plays when you are going through a bunch of like filing cabinets in hell. And that song,
I think I know this one. Yeah.
It's the that song. And it is just hearing them take smooth jazz and turning it into a Baroque, almost opera. This Baroque fugue opera with smooth jazz is another one of those moments I'm just like, I didn't know you could do that with music. It's fantastic.
That's the thing I really love about video game music is that there's really no, like, there's no set type. There's no restriction.
Well, yeah.
Video game music isn't a genre. It's more of a medium. So,
yeah,
and they can do
so much with it.
The level of experimentation, like, you go back to the old 8-bit days, like, the fact that the things were so limited back then that they really had to have a really strong melody as the hook fit with that.
But then you'll get, you know, guys like the Follin brothers who take that 8-bit sound and will just stretch that to infinity.
The Follin brothers doing, they're amazing. They're like the Prog brothers of
they really
of
are
8-bit VGM. 8 and 16-bit VGM was like
the music from Plock.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Like, oh, it's
outstanding.
It's absolutely maddening the stuff that he does with that. I go, "Hello?"
It's like, how did he pull that off?
Oh my gosh.
Even his stuff from oh geez, what's the name of the game? Super Off-Road. Basic off-road arcade racing game. He didn't need to go that hard.
Yeah. I presume you've heard the title theme from Pictionary.
Of course. Yeah, he really didn't need to go that hard on that one.
It's Pictionary.
Yeah, it's Pictionary. calm down. Calm down,
somebody
Tim.
I just said that too. Tim, it's just Pictionary.
Calm down. Yeah, or like the Silver Surfer game. Like, that game is brutally difficult. It's so hard, but the music is incredible. It's like, it's just, oh man, I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
It's fantastic. And then you'll get stuff like, you know, Metal Gear Rising, where it's the Metal Gear series has so traditionally just had like really intense, like spy music. And then all of a sudden they throw electro orchestral dubstep metal.
Yes.
And it's just like, what?
This is absolutely brutal metal out of nowhere. And it's like, what is this? This is amazing.
I play that game and I'm like, my elbows are digging into the arms of my chair because I'm just having so much fun just going like, roll the data.
Yep.
The sun comes up and the lives on the line. I'm just like, yes, rules of nature. freaking Raiden fighting against Jetstream Sam with the only thing I know for real. It's oh my goodness, it's beautiful.
That's kind of actually how I felt playing like Sonic Frontiers. Like, Sonic Frontier's soundtrack is really Sonic Frontier's soundtrack is so good, but it's like it's got this very dichotomous, like you have the very ambient sort of really just beautiful lush exploration level music,
the haunting piano just atmosphere that builds through that game,
yes, but then to go absolutely hardcore metal for the boss fights, just this
undefeated
absolute,
just like
this is absolutely brutal, like sometimes a bit screamo metal, and it's like, what is this? This is incredible. And then the feeling of actually going through those boss fights is just like, these are some of the best boss fights in the franchise. It's amazing.
I was in the car driving somewhere, and I was in charge of the aux cable, and Breakthrough It All came up on my phone, and my partner's in the car with me. And he just slowly turns to look at my phone and he just goes, what is this and what is it from? And I'm like, oh, it's Sonic Frontiers. And he just goes, what do you mean this is a Sonic song?
Yeah, yeah. What do you mean? What's going on with the Sonic franchise these days?
I love Sonic Frontiers so much. That was one of the most refreshing games I've played in so long.
Yeah, yeah.
It's beautiful, beautiful game. Beautiful story, beautiful music, just beautiful atmosphere all around. Oh my gosh. Yeah. And the characterization of some of these characters that, not to toot your horn, Ian, but just the characterization that has been brought to these characters in that game alone, it just makes me just go like, oh my gosh. Oh yes, it's good. It's so good. Oh, yeah. They understand the characters so well. Oh my gosh. Perfect. It's perfect. I love it. I love it.
I need to
play that game again.
It is such a fun game. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Breakthrough It All has got to be like one of the best Sonic boss themes in history, man.
it's one of mine. It's between that and this is an underrated one, but like it's my favorite is Chaos 7.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
It's so crazy hearing a Sonic song written in 7/4.
Yeah.
Actually, it's 7/4.
It's weird.
Yeah, it's 7/4.
It sounds really weird either way. I'm not a musician, so I couldn't say, but
I am a musician. I've been performing music for over 20 years, but I've been writing music for oh my God, as of this year, I've been writing music for 20 years. Oh gosh, the infallible movement of the progress of time. I will sometimes like listen to music and analyze everything from like the time signature down to just like the chord progressions. And there's a song, that plays in Final Fantasy VII Rebirth called Demon Gate. And that song is one of the most just breaks my brain. Because it keeps changing time signature like 20 times. Like, it opens up in just 4-4 and then 5-4 and 7-4 in the span of like 20 seconds. And I'm just like, holy crud.
Okay. Demon Gate. Okay, that boss. All right. Yeah. I had to be like, all right, that boss. Oh, God. Yeah.
Yeah. Once you, that song is insanity.
Yeah. Me and my wife recently played through Rebirth, so it's fairly fresh for me. So, yeah, that freaking, the theme for that boss, every boss theme in that game is just outstanding. But
yeah, it really, really is. The Midgard Somer theme.
Oh, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Very.
Someone said, how do I feel about the Samanid music from Splatoon? Of course I love it. It's so weird. It's dubstep Zydeco.
What?
Hello? It's dubstep Zydeco. Like it's like dubstep trap Zydeco. It's so weird. I love it.
Okay.
Like,
amazing.
You have like these weird like timpani samples, and then like what sounds like a Zydeco cello, and then banjos. And then just like a dubstep drop, and it's just like, what are we doing? And why am I in love?
I love Splatoon music so much.
It's gorgeous. Oh my goodness.
Some of it is so weird and so much fun.
I think the weirdest song in Splatoon is the song that plays at the final boss of 3.
Okay. I have not heard that.
Oh, it's so funny. Spoiler alert for everybody. At the end of it, you end up on the moon.
Of course you
fighting a giant grizzly bear.
All right, as you do.
And it's a song that like it starts off just like really, really weird orchestral, just bam, bam, and then you just hear like this really dinky just da 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 da. Just this really like cute like synthesizer, and then all of a sudden you just hear like this drum pattern just going bonk 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 bonk, and then the synthesizer that's going like da 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 da, it gets synced out of time with the rest of the song. So like the rest of the song is going like it's like fluctuating at one speed. And then that melody will like fall behind time wise with the rest of the song, and it gets just so disorienting. It's just like, what on earth am I listening to? And then the second phase comes in, and it just turns into like this dubstep orchestral trap music.
Mm-hmm.
And it's awesome, and it makes you feel so like it doesn't feel like a final boss theme. It feels like a theme of triumph. and then they take that away from you and put in a remix of the final boss theme from the first game.
Okay, where I have heard this version. Yeah,
yeah, it is the Squid Sisters from Splatoon 1.
Yeah,
and what are they called?
Off the Hook.
The Shiver Fry and Big Man,
deep cut.
It's them having this beautiful like 5-part harmony, while the bad guy from the first game, DJ Octavio, is DJing the entire thing, and it turns into this beautiful, beautiful, just triumphant song where you really feel like this is the end of a trilogy. And hearing, Shiver, I believe is the Shiver is the yellow inkling.
No, I think that's Fry. Just, I think that's Fry. Shiver is blue. Yeah.
Fry is the yellow one. Where she just lets out just like this, and when I first heard that playing the game, I went from this is so cool to this is so cool. Why am I crying? The Splatoon soundtracks weirdly make me extremely emotional. I was not expecting to cry at the end of the Octo expansion of that game when. After you cover this ginormous statue head in this magenta ink, you cover it in ink, you hop off of the statue onto this platform, and Pearl from Off the Hook just says, all right, you stand aside. I've got this. And the laser from the bad guy is charging up. And then she throws the screeching whale weapon that she has. And she just does the devil horns and just goes,
yes.
Booyah! And then just seeing that create a laser to destroy the bad guy, and then you see the two sides that you normally see when you were, like, you know, fighting against other players, and then your side blows through the enemy's side until it just says 8,888% because it's Octo, and it's just, oh, it's so cool.
So funny.
Hearing her say booyah, I was just like, this is the greatest moment of my life.
Yes.
I get weirdly emotional over the dumbest shit, and I would not change myself for the world.
I know, that's perfect. I love that because I love video game music so much, man. Like, it's just from all generations, going all the way back to when I was a kid listening there. Like, because in the original Super Mario Kart on Super Nintendo, you could pause the game.
Yes.
And the music would keep playing. So uh-huh. I would, like, sit there and often just do stuff and just have the music just looping over and over in the background. I'm sure it drove my parents absolutely freaking crazy to hear like 30-second loop over and over, but I loved it.
Yeah, I would drift off to the Star Fox 64 selection menu music.
Oh man. I heard there's a remix of that I heard recently. That is absolutely beautiful. It's gorgeous. I think you would really like it.
I actually did an orchestral arrangement of it several years ago.
Okay. Yeah.
I'd wanted to for a while, and I did it. And I'm just like,
it works so good.
I'm really happy I did this.
This is sort of like this spacey kind of prog rock version of it. Sort of like a little bit of like David Bowie in there. Like, you know. Just
I love
really
that.
Just really cool. Yeah, yeah. I'll have to look that up. I'll have to look
that
up.
While we're on fan remixes, somewhere there is a progressive rock medley. It's like a 20-minute long prog rock medley of the music from our Ocarina of Time.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the whole thing, but there's a segment of it that I just have on loop forever. And it is when they get to the Shadow Temple theme, where it goes from this, like, progressive rock, you know, just, you know, like, you know, they're just going off. And, yeah, there it is, the soundtrack of Ocarina of Time, but it's a prog rock concept album.
Yeah, okay, Dr. Pez, yes. Okay, he's really good,
Once they get to the Shadow Temple theme, it turns into, like, this almost, like, oh, gosh, how would I even describe it? It's almost like a flamenco, but this really, like, haunting, grim, dark flamenco where a trumpet comes in,
mm-hmm.
and the guitar just goes like bow down, bow down, and the bongos are just playing, and it's so good and so fitting for the Shadow Temple, because like whenever somebody does a remix of the Shadow Temple and they go all in on the bongos, I love it.
Yes.
The boss of that dungeon is Bongo Bongo.
Right. Exactly.
And it fits so well, because that whole time, if in the original, for those of you who don't know, there's a dungeon where you go, and you go into this. At first, you think it's a crypt, and then you find out that it's a torture chamber. And at the end of the torture chamber, in this deep pit, there is the ghost of something that is just playing on this ginormous bongo drum, and the music that plays when you are going through the dungeon, you just hear this gentle slapping of bongos the entire time, and it's just like, oh, that's diegetic music. That is like that you are hearing that in the actual dungeon. You're not hearing that in the music. That is Bongo Bongo waiting to kill you. It's beautiful. I love it.
That is fantastic. Yeah. Yeah. Outstanding. Wow. It really does sound like we could talk about this stuff for forever, but I'm sure Ian would like to get a question in. Maybe if he has one, if he's come up with anything.
No. See, this is why I love when we have someone who is passionate about their craft and really knows the ins and outs of it.
Yeah.
It's like whenever I get you on a tier about any kind of musical history, Kyle.
Uh-huh.
So it's like I just sit back and let the masters talk their craft and just kind of soak it in. I'm watching the chat and all these suggested videos are flying by and it's like, well, that's my evening booked out.
Yeah. Yep.
It's what the industry like to call good content.
Exactly.
I'm pretty much joining the listeners right now, sitting back going, yeah, grooving.
Yep. Yep. Awesome. Awesome.
That being said, we have kind of come to time, and I don't want to keep you all day.
Mm-hmm.
You absolutely should go over to Kyle's show, KNGI, and like do an entire riff on game music there.
We can do that sometime. I've got to start doing my show again because honestly, I haven't done it in a little while. I had some stuff going on last year. I had to put that on hold and we ended up focusing mainly on doing Bumblecast, but I'll get back to that and I'll talk to you about that, Austin. Maybe sometime we can get you on over there.
I'd love to chat video game music with you.
Yes. All right. Let's do it.
Heck yes.
Before these guys dive in yet again, and I'm very tempted to mention the name Sakuraba, but that would add another hour of show, I'm sure. Austin, yes. Where can people find you after the show?
Oh, goodness gracious. You can find me at amtrax.bluesky.social. That's amtrax.bluesky.social. I stream on Twitch almost every day. Sometimes I'll like take like the weekend off. I'm probably going to take the rest of the night off, but I'll come back to it tomorrow. I stream, instead of giving you my Twitch handle, I'm just going to give you the easy one, which is mousethemouse.live, which is M-A-U-S, themouse.live.
Alrighty.
Amtrax, not Amtrak, Amtrax.
Not Amtrak.
A-M-T-R-A-X. And then if you want my resume, it's austinleematthews.com. And if you're curious about my radio show, you can find that at megatongirl.com. I put like over a decade of my life into developing it and I think it came out really, really good. It's a nice self-contained 8.5 episode story that I am endlessly proud of and I'm proud of the entire cast. So, those are the main places that I haunt.
Outstanding. Thank you very much, Austin, for coming on. It's been great talking to you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on. This was fantastic.
I wish I had a tenth of your energy, sir. There's so much I could do.
When you get me going, I don't stop.
Yeah, right. I can tell.
I'm like the Energizer Bunny, except I'm a mouse.
Yeah, yeah. I want to ask one last thing. Have you ever been to MAGFest or heard of it?
I have not been to MAGFest, but last year I got to guest at MAGWest with some of the other cast of Final Fantasy VII.
Okay, awesome, awesome. Okay, so you are familiar with them. I've been like, I remember MAGFest when they first started back in like 2002, 2003. I've only been there twice. Once was last year and before that was 2012, mm-hmm. I want to say, but I've been following it for years and I just love that there's this big celebration of video game music and it's like, that's really where all my people are, is like at MAGFest and places like that, MAGWest, VGMCon, all those places. I love that.
I got to introduce an orchestra at MAGWest, and that was a lot of fun.
Oh, amazing. Amazing.
Yeah, I want to do MAGFest proper, and I want to see my buddy Vinny play. I want to see Red Vox.
Yeah. It's so much fun. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
You know Vinny?
Of course I know Vinny. Oh, have you not heard of Pocket Lint and 13 Gil?
No.
Oh, sorry to distract one last time.
Okay, go ahead.
I was watching a VOD of Vinny playing Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, and he did the parade minigame, and he ended up losing, and when you lose, Roche is like, I win, yes! And he just went like, oh no, I've put my whole P word into that and I still lost to Roche. No, no, no. And he exits out of the game. And then he beats the parade mini game. He wins. And then you fight Roche like right afterward. And when you beat Roche, you think, oh goodness, he's going to try and kill me. And he's just like, oh no, you beat me. No, my men, we salute you. Also, here is a keychain that is literally just a keychain of Roche. He literally just gives you a piece of of his own merch.
Pretty much.
You can equip it. You can equip it to Cloud, and it just makes him a little bit faster. and a little plush dog. He just gives you little gifts. And then Vinny was just like, all right, thanks for the kiss, bro. And then as he's walking away, Vinny just goes, and now a gift for you, pocket lint and 13 kill. It's all that I had. You earned it, big boy.
Okay. And so sounds kind of familiar now. Yeah.
And so I posted, hearing at Vine Sauce, say I put my whole blank into this while losing to me is a check off on my bucket list that I didn't know that I had. and then we ended up he followed me after I'd been following him for years because I'm a huge fan, and he's just like, hey dude, what's up? I'm really glad that made you happy. And he's just like, hey, I saw that you liked the pocket lint and 13 gil thing. Would you be, fine recording that for me to share with chat? And he's like, no worries if not. And I'm just like, oh, I literally recorded it as soon as we started talking. and then he's like, all right, chat, I have a present for you. And he put together a video where he lip synced Cloud, he lip synced Roche. From the end of that cutscene, just being like, okay. And now a gift for you, a pocket lit and 13 gil. It's all that I had. You earned it, big boy. And then blowing a kiss at Cloud.
Okay, that's where I've seen it, was from that clip. All right, yes, yeah. All right, yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And that has become, that moment has become strangely such a part of my online brand.
Yes.
Somehow.
Yeah.
And whenever I do conventions and I'm there with Roche Prince, people are just like, hey, can you sign it pocket lit in 13 gil? And I'm like, of course, my friend. You earned it, big boy.
Yeah. Amazing. Awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. All right. I think we'll call it here.
The mean one and call it there. Yeah. Otherwise, we're just going to go all night.
We can go forever.
We'll go on all night if you don't stop me.
I will be the adult in the room. I put my foot down.
I'm okay with that. I don't know about Ian. Ian's got his own life, his own stuff going on over here. I don't know.
Somebody stop me. I'm smoking.
Again. Thank you so much, Austin, for fantastic episode.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you. Kyle,
for the music discussion, because that was just fun to sit in and listen to.
Awesome.
And, thank you, dear listeners, for joining us. We will see you next time for the next Bumblecast. Just as a reminder, we are bumping up Bumblecast Live in June to the 20th. We got some scheduling stuff coming up in July, so we're trying to get ahead of that. So we will see you for Bumblecast Live Saturday, June 20th, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Is that it? Did I get everything?
I think that's it.
All right. Be good to yourselves. Be good to each others. And we will see you next time on the Bumblecast, big boys and girls.
I'll see you on the road, my friends.
Hello, hello.
Hello, is this IHOP?
Yes.
Yes, home of the highest stack of pancakes you can shake a fork at.
Oh, good, because I really want a Cinestack in a bad way right now.
Boy, that sounds delicious. Also to kill you, but yeah.
Anyway. Oh, yes. Yes. Yes, it will.
Yes, there's so much.
If you're going to choose your way to go, that's the way.
What a way to go, indeed.
Exactly. Incredibly hype on podcast. That's what IHOP stands for. Good one, Lorenzo. Good one.
You've been listening to the Bumblecast, a co-production of Bumble King Comics and the KNGI Network. Original theme music composed by Ken Coda Snyder. Remixed intro by T-Lopes. Find out more information, along with podcast feeder links, MP3 downloads, and more at bumbleking.com and kngi.org.
I mean, really, he's just being coy. They said it's three games, but the fourth FF7R is for Final Fantasy VII Roche.
Exactly.
I was joking years ago about that. They're just like, hey, what if there was a Roche DLC? And I'm like, well, yeah, because we had Final Fantasy VII Intergrade, and with Roche it would be Final Fantasy VII Interstate.
Perfect. Perfect.